Hey, it's Liz Kelly, and welcome to the Ringer Podcast Network. For all the movie fans out there, the Big Picture Podcast now has its own dedicated Twitter feed, at The Big Pick. Not only will you find the best in Ringer film analysis and the news you need for award season, it's also the exclusive source for all the movie and video-related content you need, from A Star Is Born mashups to Sean Fennessy tweeting out GIFs. So make sure you follow at The Big Pick on Twitter.
What's going on, jabronis? It's Pitch Mr. Perfect, Skylar Astin.
Hey, this is Bruce Pritchard.
Roast Battle Season 1 champion, Mike Lund.
The king of sad stop.
The Silver Lake heartthrob.
It's Trey Kirby.
It's Nick Mundy.
This is your girl, WWE superstar, the legit boss, Sasha Banks.
Hey, this is WWE superstar, Braun Strowman.
My name's Kevin Owens.
I have Shinsuke Nakamura.
Zach Linder.
Dan Black, a.k.a. the Goof Haraja.
I'm AJ Styles, the phenomenal one, if you will, and you're listening.
You're listening to this.
You're listening to the Masked Man Show.
Welcome to the Masked Man Show.
Ho, ho, ho. Happy holidays. So people are mad about happy holidays. I thought that was a joke that people were mad about, or Merry Christmas and stuff. Mm-hmm. We're going to leave that aside for right now. It's a pro wrestling podcast, and this is not just any episode of the Masked Man Show. I'm talking here to my heel producer, Jim, who's sitting in the room with me for a change. We had TLC on Sunday, which we're going to talk all about. But the biggest news of the week is that Vince McMahon returned to Raw along with Stephanie McMahon, who is, you know, there a good bit of the time, Triple H, her husband, and Shane McMahon, who's in, you know, on screen running SmackDown, to make a major announcement. And that was basically, this is so confusing. I mean, it's not confusing. It's confusing to try to work through it. They announced that there was a new era of WWE in which they'd be listening to the fans more, focusing on new faces and new matches. I honestly got kind of worked by it. When Vince came out, it seemed like he was about to retire. Because then he kind of came out and he was like, I got something to say. And then he brought out Stephanie, brought out Triple H. And I just couldn't get it over my head. Like, is it possible that he's going to make this totally out of kayfabe? Like, I'm retiring and here are the people who are taking over announcement on Raw. But no, of course not. It's fun to get yourself worked up. It was so lame. The announcement was basically like, before I call it lame all the way through, hopefully it's awesome. Hopefully this will lead to some great stuff. But then now I said to somebody, it was like something out of Office Space. It was like the management calls a meeting to
Bob's.
Upper management calls a meeting to announce a series of future meetings. Like that's what it was. It's like, hey, we're going to change everything, but for now. And then they were clearly reacting to low ratings on Raw, although they didn't, I don't think they said those words outright. And they, you know, were implicitly reacting to the overall sort of malaise of the fan base, right? I mean, we got like Becky's clicking, but kind of nothing else is getting people excited. And you know, there was a couple of moments at TLC where that really shone through. But then they blamed it all on Baron Corbin, which is crazy because why are you bringing out the McMahons to say we understand there's a problem? If the solution is kayfabe, I guess you kind of have to play act through all this. There's not a definitive right way or wrong way. But the reason why Vince McMahon was a super successful heel in the Austin era was because he actually owned the company and was actually making the decisions.
Didn't Stephanie McMahon appoint Baron Corbin?
Yes.
So doesn't it fall on her too?
Yeah, one would think. I mean, and then there's the shoot part of it, which is that there's always this thing that the McMahons being on TV helps ratings. Right. So putting them all on there, especially Triple H, whether it was a 1 week play, I mean, they're going to be back, but like whether it was just trying to see how much effect that would have or what their presence does affect things, whether or not they're actually going to change the way they do things. That's a different matter. Although there were some positive signs. I will say that there were some positive signs. Should we start with what happened on SmackDown and Raw, or should we start with TLC? Should we start with
TLC? I think TLC, chronological.
Chronological is always better. Chronological is logical. That's why the word's in there. I'll tell you what, I tuned in at 8 and that was a mistake. I missed like 8 of the matches. I don't, there were so many matches on this card.
And I think it actually started at 7. So it was very confusing when, like, I watched the main event and then kept waiting for the Braun Strowman match. But we got, let's see, Elias over Bobby Lashley. That just sort of carried on over to Raw. That was fine. Carmella and R-Truth winning the mixed match challenge was great. I mean, that was the right choice, but I'm not really sure what the point of then, you know, Miz and Mandy Rose going over them on SmackDown was a kind of weird fallout. The important thing is that Braun Strowman destroyed the first important thing, Braun Strowman over Baron Corbin. When Braun Strowman comes down in a sling and is basically like, this is a no disqualification match, so all of the sort of milquetoast baby faces from the Raw roster who you've been messing around with are going to come out and beat you up. And then they kind of replayed that on Raw, or they did replay that on Raw. It was a good story. I mean, it was a good they did it well. If I'm going to nitpick, it's that one, Braun Strowman is now too much of a babyface. Like, it should not be this hard to straddle the line. He should not have had to go full heel when he's feuding with the Shield, and he should not have to be like kissing babies now to prove that he's a babyface. He could just be Braun Strowman. And to have him aligned with like, you know, those folks was just a little bit too much. And also, I'm not sure. Yeah, well, whatever. I'm not going to complain about his injury. But the rest of it was pretty well done. I like the Heath Slater was involved. It's a good look for it was a good look for Apollo Crews. I mean, it was the right place for Finn Balor to be involved, but you know, it seemed like a little, just the company that he was keeping, you'd wish it was a little bit higher, you know, higher level. And apparently that's on the way. We'll get to that in a little bit. But the big fallout of that in Raw is that Baron Corbin is no longer the GM, or no longer the GM in waiting, and will not be the GM. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see what they do with him, because for all of the heat that he got, that he gets for all of, I mean, they used him as a heat magnet in that role, and it was a good use of him. And I'm not really sure what you do with him now, but he is a good, fine wrestler, and he's a really good talker. Like, I was just watching him on Monday night with the valet, and I was just like, damn, he can act, man. Like, he's like, this is actually, he's pretty impressive on the mic. He had some stumbles on Raw, but even then, the recoveries were good. And he could just he's in the ring with the entire McMahon family and, you know, kind of holding his own. Anyway, and also I say this stuff from time to time, but I saw him backstage at Survivor Series. I mean, at Hell in a Cell. And he's so impressive looking. Right. I think just because of his build, he looks real thin, but he was walking around with like a sleeveless t-shirt on.
Shocker.
Or it's at Survivor Series. Yeah, what'd I say? Hell in a Cell. It's Survivor Series. And he was, and his arms are like twice as big as my legs. Like, he's a real strong dude. Maybe now it's just because he's wrestling in like a black skinny shirt. You know, like, there's something to do with him. I'm not exactly sure what it is.
I think you're higher on him than a lot of other people.
No, I don't think he's that good. I think it's just interesting that, like, he's had an incredibly important role for them. He's proven his worth. I don't think he's a top tier guy, but like, they are going to have to find what is the right way to use him? How would Paul Heyman book him? You know, Paul Heyman wouldn't fire the guy. He's got a right role. We just got to figure out what it is.
His moveset, is it anywhere close to Mike Awesome's? No, right?
Moveset?
Yeah.
Nah, like, might not. Different style.
Or anything.
He probably could. I mean, he's a real big guy.
He played in the NFL, right?
Yeah, he's a very athletic guy.
Yeah.
What, and that's another thing that we've talked about that before, right? The NFL thing. It is important to WWE to have this NFL, to have him there as an example to former NFL players, that there's a career for you in WWE if you choose to have one. That's something that they care about. Anyway, enough about him. It'll be interesting to see where that goes. Let's see, Natalya over Ruby Riott. That was a fun little thing. Finn Balor over Drew McIntyre. You know, the word from what Meltzer this week is that Finn's going to get a push. Yeah, he said, you know, after being mired in the middle, he's about to get a significant push, at least for a little while. So
I mean, they need to figure out something on the, you know, the babyface side on Raw. There's obviously a lot of people there in the running, but nobody's elevated. And they at one point obviously thought Finn was that guy, and maybe he'll be there again. I love him. I mean, I really enjoyed that little match that he had with Drew McIntyre on Sunday. And
what would you like to see done with Finn? What would you do with Finn?
Well, I mean, I think they were booking him right at the beginning, which is like just have him win and see how far the golden boy babyface thing can take you. And then he was interesting when he had a little bit of that when he was with the club, and they had a little bit of that sneering, I'm not quite sure if he's going to turn heel vibe to him.
What happened to the club? Did they disband?
They wrestled on SmackDown this week. I mean, the Gallows and Anderson
brothers or whatever.
Yeah, but they're on. But they got sent to SmackDown.
Did they disband? They never talk about them anymore.
Well, they were always just sort of friends, you know. There was an unofficial alliance. I guess it was official for a little bit, but.
But they just never talk about it anymore. It's just kind of fizzled out.
But now we got, and the only thing I didn't really like about leading up to the Balor McIntyre match at TLC was that it should have been Balor. I mean, it should have been McIntyre versus Ziggler. Like, let them have the blow off. Let them just have a brawl. They probably didn't do that because they already had Seth and Dean scheduled for the card, and that was already, we have a breakup brawl.
Right.
So they let Ziggler just sort of be on the periphery of this Balor McIntyre thing, and then he ended up being a part of the match, and now the three of them are going to fight each other next week. And I mean, I like all three of these guys. I think all three of these guys should be very central parts of the product. And it's fun to watch from where we're sitting because you get to try to figure out like what the path forward is going to be to manage to not diminish any of the three of them. Now Ziggler could get diminished. I mean, we don't know what they feel about how high they are on end this week, but I thought the TLC match was really fun and the ending was just right. I'm looking at WWE.com's like match recap as I'm saying this. And there is one Facebook comment, and it's, I'm glad Finn won ! That's Ryan Wingard. Yeah, WWE.com comments are fun.
I used to like the New York Post comment section. It was like the worst.
Did they have it?
The worst group. Oh yeah. It was ridiculous. Just people fighting.
Comment sections are just inherently hilarious.
I know.
Then we get to a whole bunch of stuff that matters. It doesn't matter. Mysterio defeated Randy Orton. Did you see that spot where he slid out of the ring on his, he like belly slid? Chair. Yeah, on the chair. It was incredible. You know, you see all these moments that happen when like people are, there's so many flubs that are like in like TLC kind of matches where it's like the slightest little misstep could like really hurt somebody and it's hard to watch. But like Rey Mysterio,
it's the best.
Rey Mysterio could, if you put down just like, if you filled up the ring with upward pointed razor blades and said that he's going to like do handsprings through the ring, I would just be like, all right, I'm sure he's got this figured out. He's so seamless, man.
Like, who's that actor that played like Nightcrawler in like the X-Men who can like do all those tricks, things like that?
Who?
You know, he's some martial artist.
Oh, yeah. Was it Ray Park?
He's the guy from Star Wars.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, like Rey Mysterio could do that type of stuff, like through all different lasers. Would you be shocked to find out that there's been four different guys who've been Rey Mysterio through the years?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You'd be shocked?
Although you can make that conspiracy. If you wanted to be an online conspiracy theorist, it wouldn't be the hardest thing in the world because he's had like four different bodies over the years.
I know. He's like so much thicker.
But now he's sort of thin. He's thinned out from where he started.
I mean, yeah, he used to be like a child out there.
It's funny when you see these guys, how, especially on SmackDown, I have a writer who's we've been talking about this a lot about kind of wrestler bodies, but it's really interesting to see how on the SmackDown side in particular, how like wrestlers are sort of thinned out, and it's like they're not built for looking like superheroes. They're built now for working 300 days a year, you know, and the smaller guys who are in really good shape, you know, cutting weight is actually it seems like it's the way to go, right?
Yeah.
And you look over on SmackDown, it's like Tyler Breeze on Raw, right?
Right.
But Tyler Breeze is getting another look. the tag teams, all the NXT call-ups are smaller and smaller, but on SmackDown, we have AJ and Daniel Bryan, you know, fighting for the title. And then we have Mustafa Ali is now a full-time SmackDown call-up. We're just going to like bring 205 Live guys into the ring. I mean, into the roster. And Andrade Almas was there in the main event too. And all those, there's just like, this is a very streamlined version of pro wrestling.
And I was going to say, maybe the big guys are kind of going to go extinct. They're just going to have 305 Live, and they just put all the big guys on their own show.
This is my idea, 205 and 305 Live. The entire show should be tiny people and fat and like gigantic monsters, just because everybody loves seeing little guys get the win over behemoths. But yeah, the big guys are going to go. I mean, I think that Randy Orton coming up through developmental now would probably be trained to wrestle like Baron Corbin. You know, I mean, he's just a much bigger dude than everybody else around him. But, you know, we'll see. Ronda Rousey beat Nia Jax, but none of that matters because, and why we'll talk about that later. Daniel Bryan over AJ Styles was, I mean, I don't know if you can call it the match of the year because it wasn't like some incredible thing happened. It didn't have a giant finish. There was no like epic surprises, but that match was amazing. Just rewatch that 5 times. That was so much fun. Daniel Bryan is so good at working heel. He also has his first good ring gear and maybe ever.
It's all hemp.
I'm just not a big fan. I was never a fan of the color schemes that he used before, but this is just, he's wearing black. He's got the American Dragon logos on his knees. He just like, looks, it's really good.
You don't like the Merlot underwear, the Lord Steven Regal.
I don't mind that look as like one of your looks. And obviously lately he kind of can't gone to like the Seahawks color. So he has some, but it's weird to kind of, that's not the color, not weird. That's if I was trying to pick a color for myself that all my merch was going to be the same color. I don't think I would pick like the color that my mom's Mazda was in 1989. Yeah. Maybe that's a personal thing, that a personal problem I have with the Mazda
that your mom loved more than she loved.
It became my Mazda. I loved that car. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, obviously.
Potential Mazda sponsors out there.
No feelings.
Okay. I don't want to ostracize them. The Mazda PR department.
Save it for your therapist.
Listen, that match was freaking awesome, and then it was followed by what was universally derided as like the least awesome version of a match possible, which is Ambrose versus Rollins, who hate each other so much, they had like a clinical wrestling match that dragged on for a long time, and then Seth got mad and smacked him around. I don't know what was happening here. Go online and read people complaining about it. This was not a good version. This is not a good execution. The rumors were
that you didn't like it either?
No, I mean, I thought it was fine, but it didn't tell the story they were trying to tell. I don't know why. Right, so both of these guys are supposed to be headliners in the not-too-distant future. And they are and they have been, but like they're getting primed. And I think there was, if I had to guess, I think it was the tension there was this the trepidation of them not, either of them looking diminished after the fight. You know, they all had to get their stuff in. And part of getting your stuff in is like having a main event level match in the middle of the card. Not the middle of the card, second to last, but like, I don't know. Just wasn't there.
I was surprised for them being, you know, having as much experience as they have and being as good as they are regarded, at least. There was that blown spot where Ambrose was on like the second rope in the corner.
Uh-huh.
And Rollins tried to do the sunset flip into the powerbomb.
Oh, yeah.
He fell. He like slipped.
Uh-huh.
But then Ambrose just like, I don't know. He just kind of like played it off, kind of talking to the crowd. But it was just obviously so... I would have thought they'd be more creative with that.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's not easy on the fly, but still.
It's never easy on the fly, and you don't want to get too down on anybody. But that's sort of like, I think that in a weird way, that match just exposed, instead of accentuating these two guys, it should be, you know, the very elite of the company. It kind of exposed their greatest flaws. And with in Ron's case, it's that like, his presentation is that of this like, you know, for lack of a better term, the sort of indie wrestling, like, you know, incredible moveset, incredible like athleticism, improvisation, all this kind of stuff. But he's not, you know, he's like, it's very methodical with him. There's a lot of repetition, a lot of sameness. And there's a lot of, you know, that one little thing is a good example where it's like, yeah, you'd think he would just be immediately doing something else or like, yeah, you know, playing it off, whatever. But he's just... he's a natural at like 75 to 85% of what it takes to be a wrestler. And then, I don't know, just to go through with this. I mean, they're not the producers for this match. Obviously they have a lot of input, but someone else told them what to do or gave them, you know, helped organize it. I think that was Jamie Noble, if I remember from the production card, and then on Ambrose's part, you know, I mean, he should be brawling. He should just be crazy. And this match made him look like, you know, a technician for half of it. And it's just not, I don't know why you don't, this should have just been two guys punching each other.
A boxing match?
No, like standing in the middle of the ring and just swinging and forearming and just doing whatever, you know?
Just going back and forth.
You don't need to have like the slow build, which is weird because WWE does not doesn't always do this. They're not hidebound attached to do it to like steadily ramping up aggression. It's really easy. If a match means this much, if it's supposed to be this sort of blood feud, fans will forgive you this, like, you know, jumping to the middle. You can just have them start wailing on each other. It doesn't have to be that long. I was watching, just coincidentally, a couple weeks ago, the Battle for Atlanta, which is like one of the great matches of all time. It was Buzz Sawyer versus Wildfire Tommy Rich. The reason why it was so legendary is because the tape of it was lost for like 20 years. And WWE, when they bought WCW, they just found the tape unmarked in like the boxes of shit that they got.
Nice.
But it's one of the, this is one of the great feuds of Mid-South, one of the most legendary just sort of like blood feuds. They hate each other so much. What really stuck out to me was that it was a cage match, you know, and the stakes were a little bit higher, but there was like no work rate in this match. And Tommy Rich bladed, I believe, 3 minutes and 20 seconds into the match.
Nice.
There was no like rising tension. There was no build in this match. They got in the match, started throwing each other as hard as they could against the side of the cage, and then they both just busted, you know, got busted open, and people thought it was the most important thing they'd ever seen in their lives.
Yeah. Do you think Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose wanted to have more of an old school slow match?
I think
because they're just having so many matches anyway, like this is going to be that.
Yeah,
style.
I'm sure they probably were like, let's do something different. And this is how we're going to do it. And you know, for all we know, they were told like, you're going to have a cage match at the Royal Rumble. So save it. You know, who knows? But this is TLC.
Exactly.
This is regardless. I mean, it's for all that people complain about the, you know, justifiably about Hell in a Cell, TLC, all these branded pay-per-views that where you kind of like have to shoehorn in these gimmicks. Like, this was the match that really could have used the TLC. And also, I saw a lot of people saying, well, they couldn't do it because they wasted the TLC gimmick on the Braun Strowman-Baron Corbin match. I know that they generally only do one of each kind of match, but, like, come on. Like, you could, like, there's not a rule that you can only do one.
Right.
And if WWE didn't do it for that reason, like, that's crazy. Anyway. Enough about that.
So you weren't mad about the fans chanting, this is boring?
I did get mad in real time. I was like, come on, guys. But it wasn't.
I always like when you're mad at the
But
crowd.
The thing is, I don't think, I mean, it didn't strike me as a particularly boring match, but it was like a disappointing match and you could feel it in real time, you know?
Yeah.
They should have just been like brass knuckles punching each other in the face for 15 minutes. That's the whole match. That would have been the whole thing, you know? And it could have made Dean look really good. And then on Monday Night Raw, I don't know what to say. I thought Dean was really good. I mean, the other part about the match that didn't make much sense is like, I don't know why Dean really wants the Intercontinental title. You know, like logically, he explained on Monday, he did a good job saying, you know, he wanted to take everything that meant anything to Seth Rollins and that meant a lot to him, but he should have just said that. And then like, I don't know what he should have done, but the logical end of that argument is now I have the IC title and I'm going to just throw it away. I'm not going to have an open challenge, you know?
Yeah.
For anyone except for Seth Rollins. I don't know. But anyway, that match was really good. Tyler Breeze is good. Glad to see him back. If that's what the new era is all about, I'm not quite sure what it means, but it's good to see guys like him look good.
Main event.
Tyler Breeze is a lot of fun. I hope they give him enough of a push so then Fandango can come back and, like, you know, be really mad that he kept fighting in his absence. But so anyway, Dean Ambrose, your new Intercontinental Champion. Oh, and Seth Rollins was dressed as one of his little gas masked bodyguards, which is was the most obvious thing in the history of pro wrestling. Like, I was, the second that Dean Ambrose came out, or those guys came out, I was like, all right, which one of them is Seth? It's not the black guy.
Yeah.
One of the other three. I mean, it was just so but they projected it so much, but I guess that's sort of the point. That's what pro wrestling is. And then the main event of the show, TLC, Asuka beats Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair to win the SmackDown Women's Championship, which was, I thought, just a brilliant move. Because no one's going to be mad that Asuka won. And the whole point was to set up Ronda Rousey versus Becky and Charlotte, I guess, at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Ronda pushing the ladder over was a little bit weak.
Yeah.
It's a really hard spot to pull off because it's so freaking dangerous.
I wasn't worried about that. I don't know. It was almost like a charity gift for Asuka.
Yeah.
She felt like she was such a monster, and then this is how she gets it.
Well, I mean, I know this is like, whatever, like I should give myself over to the kayfabe of it, but like Becky and Charlotte both endured much more damaging blows during the course of that match than jumping five rungs up a ladder into the mat.
When Becky Lynch came off that ladder onto the table, onto Charlotte on the table, and the table didn't give, and I thought Charlotte like broke her ribs.
It is amazing that Charlotte did not have broken ribs.
Yeah, because all her weight hit her right there.
It was like, yes. If I jumped butt first from the ceiling of this room onto you, you would be dead.
Yeah.
I'm real fat.
I thought Charlotte almost made the noise. Remember when the woman was doing the stomping the grapes on that like viral video, the old YouTube video?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and she like falls and she gets the wind knocked out of her.
Yes.
Yeah, that was like almost what happened to Charlotte. I guess she got the wind knocked out of her probably, but it looked like broke all of her ribs. I figured she'd have like internal bleeding from that. Yeah. That looked bad. So
I was pretty sure that it wasn't bad. I mean, you know, we're all so hardened smart marks here, but like, they didn't throw up the X, right? They didn't call medical people down in the ring. But I thought...
But she swore out loud a couple of times. And also, I saw the ref when he was talking to her. He kept putting his hand behind his back and like pressing something. I thought maybe he was like...
He was communicating.
That's what I figured. A little hit the button for
But
help.
They throw up the X. I mean, they'll throw up the X symbol if somebody's really hurt. I think they still do that. But here's the thing. Even though I didn't think that she was like dead...
Mm-hmm.
I was still very surprised to see her get back in the ring, and even more surprised than her getting back was that she wasn't apparently hurt at all.
Yeah. She must have just knocked the wind out of her. So that table was supposed to break more. Do you think they were just lighter and those tables are used to the heavier men wrestlers?
Yeah.
Just go through it.
Correct.
Instead. Yeah. Because
but also it wasn't, the whole spot was a little bit off because,
she wasn't supposed to land right there. That looks
she cool. wasn't supposed to land butt first onto Charlotte's chest.
Get past her.
But there wasn't a right place for her to land. Like Charlotte should have been either a little bit more towards the middle of the table. If Asuka was supposed to, I mean, which clearly she was, if Asuka was supposed to not be part of that bump.
Right.
Then I don't know why. Then it seems weird that they set it up that they were evenly spaced on the table, so that Becky really didn't have anywhere to land except for on Charlotte. Well, if she had like 6 more inches on the ring side of the table, then that's where her butt should have gone. But there was really no space. It didn't seem like there was space for it.
I thought her butt was supposed to land past Charlotte, like almost like a senton. Is that what it's called when you're
gonna
like drop on the person? But she didn't get past her, so that's why Asuka moved, and then she was kind of going to land on her like that. But instead, she didn't get past her.
Jumping off of ladders is hard.
Yeah. And then also Charlotte, when she speared, I think it was Asuka, through the guardrail, which also didn't give quite as much as normally when they go through. I thought she might have been she might have broke her neck or had a concussion.
No,
the
whole last act of that match felt like some little jokester had come through and like glued everything more than it should have been glued. It's just like, oh, I'm just going to put this release pin back in. No one will know that was me. That was, yeah. Who would that have been? That was like...
Dan St. Germain.
No. What wrestler lost their push to give... it was like Carmella was like, yeah, you're going to take me out of the main event. I'll show you, or whatever. Right. Or Alexa Bliss is like, everybody's talking about the SmackDown match. Yeah, no one misses me, huh? Well, we'll see.
Oh, that's true.
Or maybe it was Nia Jax who was just like... People think I'm dangerous? I'll show you dangerous. Yeah. Oh, man. That would be great. I just want Nia Jax going there and fucking everything up. So she had like a functional... Nia Jax had a functional match with Rousey, but Rousey's biggest role, like we were just talking about, was coming out and pushing over that ladder. Now, maybe I'm spoiled from the Attitude Era. I try not to get blinded by this stuff too much, but man, if you push over a ladder with two people on top, If you're going to do that spot, have them fall out of the ring onto a stack of tables or something.
On fire.
It doesn't need to be on fire. But like, it doesn't make sense. If you pushed over a ladder with two people on top, they would fall out of the ring. Right? Or have them do the bump where they... I mean, it's too dangerous. I know why you're not doing it. But they should be doing either the bump where they catch the top rope and toss themselves over, or they should fall out onto a table. I'm not saying they should do that, but I'm saying you shouldn't do the push over the ladder spot where both people have to gimmick their fall so they jump and pretend that they were jolted by landing with their armpit on the top rope.
Right.
You just got butt planted off of a ladder through a table 5 minutes ago and got back in the ring and you were fine. And now you like can't survive a 4 foot fall onto your feet. I mean, I don't know. It's very strange. Anyway, the good thing about it is they're actually going through with, you know, Rousey versus Charlotte or Becky. Although I don't know how they're going to get through the Rumble. Have they announced when that, did they announce any future matches for that division? I assume they're going to save it for WrestleMania, but they got a lot of booking them. They got to do something at the Royal Rumble.
Yeah. Aren't they also going to start the women's tag division?
Are they officially announced titles?
I don't know.
They should. It's, I mean, they have to. There's rumors and innuendo, as some people would say.
There you go.
But anyway, that match was a lot of fun. Really cool that they put that on as the main event. It sort of had to be the main event. I talked to some WWE folks about this, and we've talked about it on the podcast. But we're basically staring down Ronda versus Becky and Charlotte, or one of the two, as your WrestleMania main event.
So we're not quite on the road to WrestleMania, but we're like pulling out of the driveway.
We're on the road to WrestleMania.
I thought the road to WrestleMania started at like Royal Rumble.
No. Well, that's the official road to WrestleMania. Yeah, so we're
pulling out of the driveway.
But a road doesn't begin when you get on it. The road has been there the whole time.
But we're not on it.
No, you're right. I fucked that up. Man, I thought that was going to be the greatest metaphorical takedown of all time.
The sidewalk to WrestleMania.
Yeah, we're on this. We're in the driveway to WrestleMania. Yeah. Listen, the more we talk about pulling onto roads and merging and entering and
truck stop,
this is all just going to be one big sexual innuendo, but in about 30 seconds. So let's move on. All right. So that was, I mean, overall, it was a really good show. The TLC portion of the show was, you know, kind of here. You know, it didn't use it to its full extent. Also, there were 12 matches, which is way too many matches.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, if we're really looking for like what the future of Raw is going to look like, the future of WWE is going to look like, then maybe it will have something to do with not having 12 matches on pay-per-views, but who knows?
So has the WWE, formerly the WWF, ever caught flack for using TLC because of the Learning Channel?
No.
Or from T-Buzz, Left Eye, and Chili?
No.
No?
They did. There was a period. Oh God, when was it? About a decade ago, they did get into a big lawsuit with the Tender Loving Care lobby, who was upset that they had co-opted that for such a violent reason. No. TLC is the world, belongs to the world. Ugh, this whole McMahon family thing is so weird. I can't stop looking at it. All right, so there's a bunch of stuff that's going on. Can I just stop talking about WWE for 5 seconds?
Please.
We have all these rumors now that we've been talking about All Elite Wrestling, which is now it's now so much a thing that online writing, like Meltzer and everybody else, is just tight, and people on message boards are just writing AEW. Like, that's how you know you have a thing in the pro wrestling world, where people are just using your initials.
Right.
The biggest thing that happened in pro wrestling this week, I should have led the show with this, but it's not a big thing that, like, you know, I talk about WWE 99.9% of the time. So if anybody's listening to this podcast, they will not fully grasp it. The biggest thing that happened in wrestling this week was that this wrestler Bandido signed with Ring of Honor. If you only watch WWE, obviously you don't know who Bandido is, but if you watch a little bit of other stuff, you might remember him as the guy who was Rey Mysterio's, who tag teamed at All In with Ray Phoenix and Rey Mysterio against Kota Ibushi and the Young Bucks. He was obviously like the least famous person in that match to most people watching, but he's a Mexican luchador and supremely talented, and is part of this crew. I mean, who basically is Rey Phoenix, and Pentagon, the Lucha Bros. He's like the new. I mean, he's sort of like in that mold of he can just totally. He has so much physical charisma and in-ring skill, and a you know, relatively straightforward like indie American indie style, or a style that fits in smoothly. That he is as over in the ring as anybody. It doesn't matter, you know, that he's wearing a mask. It doesn't matter whatever else. Like, he's just incredible. Go watch your Bandido highlights. What's more significant about that is that All Elite Wrestling was planning on him being one of their big guys. Ring of Honor has been on this sort of spending spree to stave off AEW. WWE had made a concrete offer to Bandido. Bandido chose Ring of Honor. According to Meltzer, the Ring of Honor money was way more than WWE had offered. WWE raised their offer, but it still was not up to it. So he went with the money, apparently. And this is right after Ring of Honor has signed PCO, Brody King, anyone that they can kind of lock, you know, get their hooks into. Talented people, they're doing it. But Bandido is, Bandido is both a supremely talented guy. I don't want to discount his talent, but he's just sort of a bellwether, right? I mean, he's the symbol of, like, we're officially in the world of indie bidding wars. All Elite's going to be, if it happens, no one seems to know what this show is going to be. If I had to guess, I would guess it's going to be a streaming situation, and they're going to do a season and see how it goes. That we're going to get, like, you know, 12 episodes on Hulu or something. I don't know if Hulu and WWE have a relationship that would make it difficult for someone else to have a exclusive wrestling show there, but
could they do Netflix?
Sure. Netflix doesn't do episodic shows really, though.
I mean, they do, but they just like let them all out at once.
That's what I mean. Would be hard. Like you would have to do it over the span of weeks.
Right.
You can't do a pro wrestling. Lucha Underground obviously does. And is really, I really love a lot of things that Lucha Underground did. But if they were coming in with the prestige of the Elite guys, I mean, with that sort of, with the expectations, with like, the, you know, all that stuff, it would be really hard to do what they did. All the results would be leaked ahead of time because people just care more.
Yeah.
And it's not as much about the experience of watching. Cody Rhodes and the Young Bucks, their existence makes this, it's going to be treated exactly like WWE. It's not going to be treated like a boutique Lucha Underground thing. So they have a lot of expectation. You know, they have a lot to live up to. I don't know. What do you think? If it was weekly on Netflix, if they struck some deal, now would you think it would do well?
Possibly. I mean,
like Glow worked on Netflix.
Right? Yeah, exactly. It's not exactly Glow, but
I guarantee. I mean, listen,
are they going to have one home base arena? Do you think, or are they going to bounce around? I mean, it's a lot easier and cheaper to do it with one home base.
I think you'd probably do the first season. You'd probably do the first season.
Where are they based out of? I know they did Chicago.
That
was just for that.
The money is it's the Khan family who owns the Jaguars, so they're going to be down in Jacksonville.
Right.
And that's fine. I mean, that's a, you know, the Rhodes family home turf. They could figure something out. If they could get like the right, like 2,000 seat arena, make it look really cool, kind of do what Lucha Underground did by having one static place, but like instead of making it look like a Thunderdome, you make it look like Florida Championship Wrestling from 1980. You know, just make it look cool. You know, put some smoke in the air, not actual smoke, just a lot of Juul vape in the air, and just have just kind of like dim the lights, make it look like All In, make it look like kind of NXT. I think it could be really cool just to do it in one place. That's a possibility, but it's tough. It's tough to do a weekly show. I mean, it's hard to produce. And the bigger problem now that we're seeing is that they're going to have a hard time getting talent. You know, like you can't wait until the last minute and then just hope that all the good indie wrestlers show up. Everybody's out there bidding on them now because everybody's trying to carve out their space.
Right.
What was that? Do you remember I'm sure you don't, but there was a thing called the Wrestling Revolution Project.
No.
That changed its name to the Wrestling something else because they got a cease and desist based on something. It became the Wrestling Retribution Project,
nice.
Which is great. It was something like they did like a GoFundMe, but which didn't exist then, I don't think. But there was some just sort of like fundraising thing, and they got the wrestling fans to chip in like $100,000, or maybe it was more than that, and the show never came out. But it was really, they had really cool photos, and it had all the great indie wrestlers of the time I mean, of that era, not all of them, but many of the great indie wrestlers of that era.
Balor.
Yeah. I think he had a, did he have a visa issue? There were some guys with visa issues. The whole thing sort of went to shit and the show never came out. But that was an example of a point in time where you could just be like, I'm going to make a new wrestling show and everybody was available. You know, I mean, like you could put together a roster of reasonably of like awesome dudes.
Yeah. Kenny Omega was on it too. It says,
yeah,
that's cool.
Cole Cabana was in it. There are a bunch of guys that like ended up Chris Masters was in it. I forgot about that. Chris Hero, of course, was. There was just a lot of cool dudes.
As far as when you mentioned that old Florida Championship Wrestling, I think it was it WCW Saturday Night? Who had the ring on the platform that rotated?
Oh yeah,
was that just WCW Saturday?
Yeah, I think
at
so.
Disney or wherever it was.
Is that
or?
When WC? Yeah, I think that that sounds
or
right.
When it was at the
it wasn't Omni. It was definitely the small venue. It was definitely that Universal one. Studios thing,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it was one of those.
That seems dangerous, right?
Yeah, but I like it.
There's nothing better than rotating things. Here's the thing: things that spin slowly are awesome if you're on them.
Yeah,
but they're lame to look at.
If you were a heel and had a heel manager, though, he turns up the speed on the spinning ring and you somehow work that into your finisher.
That would be really good. It's like, my God, the ring's out of control. Yeah,
like his finisher, he like goes over and turns the knob and then does something.
Or if like you know that your opponent's kind of gets like car sick really easily.
Yeah. Yeah. And you hide his Dramamine before the match.
That's fantastic work, man. We should be booking a territory. But yeah, so I was talking about the Wrestling Revolution Project, aka the Wrestling Retribution Project. The worst part about it wasn't that it never came out. It was that it just sort of like dwindled. Like there were a couple of articles that were message boards that were like, what the hell ever happened to that? But it never really got the full deconstruction that it deserved. That would have been nice if that had worked. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with All Elite. It's also interesting now the Ring of Honor is like stepping up, what's going to happen with them, because their profile is lower than it's been in the past couple of years. They're still all, they're just Sinclair exclusive. So I don't really know what you...
Hadn't there been rumblings of the WWE buying Ring of Honor?
Yeah, I really thought they did. I had heard that it was a done deal.
Yeah. I had heard, could have sworn that like story broke too.
No, I mean, what happened was that they ended up, they cut a deal with them to use to get some footage. And I know they were in deeper discussions for a while. The problem, this isn't a problem, this is a wonderful thing, but the problem with the news portion of it is that WWE has this open door policy now. They're like, they took meetings with like some TNA execs a couple months ago, and it became this big thing. They're a company. They take meetings with everybody, right? But we're only recently removed from this world where like, if Triple H and Joe Koff from Ring of Honor got a beer, then like you would report with 100% accuracy that WWE has bought Ring of Honor. It's a different space. So anyway, it seemed like they were involved in that discussion. I think WWE realized that they could just sign everybody away, yeah, and not actually have to buy anything except, you know, just wait for them to disappear. And they might never do it. You know, they're valuable for some reasons. And they'll keep going forever if Sinclair decides they're going to keep going forever. So anyway, Bandido, big important dude. He signed with Ring of Honor, chose not to sign with WWE, and implicitly snubbed All Elite, although All Elite did not make an offer. They're not out there making offers. So we'll see. The other thing about All Elite, since we're just talking about it, is that people loved All In and everything, and New Japan, obviously the Bucks are two of the, and Kenny Omega, and I mean, some of the greatest workers in the world, but like, what's made them what they are is being the Elite. It's the YouTube series. It's like them being funny dudes, right? Mm-hmm. It's like acting. So you got to think that whatever show they do, there's going to be a lot of that, right? This isn't just going to be the work rate spectacular. So it'll be interesting. That said, I did say it wouldn't work on Netflix because they always release the whole season at one time, but Netflix would not have made Glow if they didn't have in their algorithm that like wrestling stuff had been doing well. They did not. There's no way they made that strictly as a favor to Jinji Cohen or whatever. Like they must have some.
Yeah, but still, that's ideas a lot different than a live professional wrestling show.
Yeah, it's true. What else do we need to talk about? Oh, we didn't really talk about Raw or SmackDown. Basically, here's what we got on Raw and SmackDown. We got a whole new era. It doesn't say a lot when like the entire McMahon family comes out at the beginning of Raw, and then on SmackDown, it's Shane McMahon comes out by himself. I guess Vince did that backstage segment with Miz later on, but like, I don't really get it. I don't know why. Yeah, the whole thing's weird. One of the theories was that they were going to get rid of the brand split too. So it makes it even weirder that they made the brand so separate. Anyway, all that aside, the worst part about this whole thing in storyline is that Paige got fired.
You love
Baron,
Paige.
No, but no, in storyline, Baron Corbin did such a bad job that Paige got fired too. Paige was doing great on SmackDown.
That's how bad he was.
Shane McMahon couldn't be bothered to run SmackDown. He was too busy like getting himself involved in dumb feuds where he had to jump off of tall things. He needs someone to run SmackDown, and he fired Paige, and then the rest of the McMahon family barely makes an appearance. In storyline, that is some dumb shit. But you started to see glimmers of what the new WWE was going to look like, you know? And I think that in some ways, we always talk about how the summer and the fall is like the downtime in WWE, and it's the time when Vince lets them try new things that sometimes end up working.
Right.
And sometimes it just drives ratings down.
Yeah.
I actually think now is the time to do it. You know what your top five WrestleMania matches are going to be right now, or you should, right? So everything else, this should be the time where you let the undercard try shit, you know? And so we are seeing a little bit of that. I think Elias and Bobby Lashley is working. You know, I mean, it's getting both of them over in a weird way. And Leo Rush, obviously, who's fantastic. Let's see, Apollo Crews, he's not there, but they're giving it, but they clearly are interested in him working, and that means something, right? The Revival are now your number one contenders for the Raw Tag Team Championships, which, regardless of what you think of the Revival, that's a sop to the crowd, to the Smart Mark crowd.
Right.
They think they're doing something that we want them to do. Everybody loves AOP also, but that's a sort of, that would have felt more like an obvious thing.
Yeah. Revival is more fun. It's different.
Chad Gable is officially one of those guys. I don't think I'm ever going to get used to seeing him in briefs. It's because he's in too good of shape. It's just sort of, it looks like, I don't know. But anyway, I like that they're doing the tag team thing with him and Bobby Roode. I like that they're all in. It really feels like something out of, you know, Mid-South or Memphis from the 80s, where they're just like, you know, like these guys are the Fantastics now, you know? And I mean, right. you can't really ignore where we've been, but it's pretty fun. It's pretty fun. And that thing where Chad Gable does the moonsault off the top rope onto the neck-breakering Bobby Roode, which is, has, you know, shades of Roode Awakening. That's a really cool move. And, yeah. I'm glad. I'm kind of happy with where they're going with them. And then Natalya is your number one contender to Ronda Rousey for next week, right? They're gonna fight. I mean, it'll be interesting to see where that happens. But I think the main beats are Finn Balor, the Revival, the existence of Tyler Breeze on Raw, and then over on SmackDown, Mustafa Ali.
Real quick, what was your takeaway from the Gauntlet itself and how it was booked?
I thought it was really well done. I think the only surprising thing, I mean, the only missed opportunity I thought was that I wish Sasha would have won, but I don't think that was the wrong decision. They might have another plan for her down the road, and they kind of used her in that role that I've talked about before, and that sort of like Roman Reignsy role, where it was like when she came to the ring, it was like, well, Natalya's not going to win. I guess Natalya, I mean, and Rousey obviously have a backstory, so it made a lot of sense for her to win. You know, and maybe this is just going to play out that storyline, and then we'll see what happens after that. But it would have been interesting for the sort of four horsewomen versus four horsewomen idea to put Sasha in that place, and then, you know, maybe Becky and Charlotte make the save and set that up for down the road.
Within kayfabe, what do you think of the idea of the gauntlet match? Like how unfair it is to different people in there.
Yeah, but it's still entertainment, even in kayfabe, right?
Yeah, I guess, but to get a shot or if it's for a title or anything, I don't know. But I guess it's the same as like Royal Rumble getting number 30. So
I wish, you know who would have been great? What would have been a great gauntlet gimmick would have been Ted DiBiase, do the Million Dollar Man and have him just
cut a check every time a guy comes down.
Guy comes down, he just makes an announcement at the beginning. He was like, I have a wad of cash in my hand, $1,000 to anybody that just lets me pin them. And you can take that at any point, even once the fight starts. Well, no, I guess you wouldn't do that.
Yeah,
you have to make your decision before the fight starts.
Yeah,
and the guy comes out and he's like, you know, you can just see the 80s, just like guy wagging his finger, doesn't have a microphone, and just like does the money hand signal, And Million Dollar Man has to give him like $5,000. And he's like, okay. And he walks out.
So were you waiting for Rhonda to betray Natalia?
Yeah.
Do you see that coming, or it's going to go the other way? They're going to keep Rhonda a face, right? Although
she's going to get booed. Doing, no, she's going to get booed. No, yeah, that was a heel promo on Monday night.
Yeah.
That, I feel like, and I think they'll let her walk the line because she sells merch and people love her and everything like that. But she's, you go into this feud knowing that she's going to get the boos.
Yeah. So you think she'll break her arm or break her leg or something?
Who, Natty?
Break Natty's.
Like, yeah.
Go too far, like snap, literally.
Maybe. That's a good idea.
Yeah, I just feel like just because you get the booze doesn't mean you're a heel. I think we've had this conversation.
Yeah, no, you're not a heel. Like a you're heel. Not a heel, and you gotta.
A heel is like what, you know, if your intentions are pure, if you're a good person or an evil person. Like you used to say, Roman was the biggest heel because he got the biggest booze, but he wasn't a heel.
But all the top baby faces in WWE have always been heels. I mean, Roman was pretty clean cut. Yeah, don't get me wrong, but he also like would come out and be like, I don't care what you think of me. I mean,
well, that was a little later that like, came later. But anyway,
but I've talked about this so many times before that Hulk Hogan was the biggest heel. I mean, I wrote about this back at Grantland, his regular ass matches against Hulk Hogan versus Jobber. He would like rake their eyes and rake their back and just do
the
all this
back rake. It's the best.
It's just so dumb. And it'd be like the referee would be like he like knocked down the ref so he could punch dudes in the face over and over again. Like it was just Hogan was a heel. And then he really did like steal his best friend's girl and like steal Bret Hart's title shot. Like what? Like it's, he was a jerk.
Yeah. Bobby Heenan was the only one who saw it.
Bobby Heenan was right, man.
I know. He's the greatest.
He was. Could you imagine if you were Bobby Heenan? It's like being an Old Testament prophet. It's like, I see what's happening right now. And no, I'm screaming as loud as I can and no one believes me.
Yeah. Or like, what's that Mel Gibson conspiracy theory movie?
Conspiracy theory?
Yeah. But you're like the only one who knows. You're like, I'm telling you, something's going on here.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well.
Oh, no, I was thinking about Braveheart. Sorry.
I was thinking of Payback.
I was thinking of What Women Want.
What Women Want, an all-timer. So just moving over to SmackDown really quick. By the way, the Gauntlet match was good. For two nights in a row, and I know that this is because I've this ingrained sexism from all these years of watching wrestling, but it was really because I hadn't seen Braun Strowman on Sunday night. That I thought that I didn't realize that I was watching the main event when I was. And then the same thing happened on Raw when the Gauntlet match was going on. I was like, well, there's no way this is the main event. And you know what, you know what that speaks to though, is that Raw was actually really good. Big announcement amounted to jack shit, but, but they did a pretty good job of, like, you know, keeping me interested to the course of the show. Looking at the results right now, it's pretty amazing. There's like three matches, but I was intrigued the whole time. It was all pretty good. Then over on SmackDown again, it was a good one. If the new era is a thing that we want to point out, you know, pieces of it, it's definitely that it was at the end of the show. It was the continued ascent of Mustafa Ali. And I mean, this isn't the first time Andrade Cien Almas has been in a main event tag match. So it's kind of hard to put him on there, but he's part of that group. But then Sanity finally getting their moment leading up to that, I thought was pretty big too.
Yeah, what did you think of the announcements of the NXT?
Oh yeah,
follow-ups.
This is really weird. So I mentioned Apollo Crews briefly before. He's not the only, or maybe not even the best version of this, but he's a great example of somebody who like actually didn't exist in NXT for that long. They kind of saw him do a couple of things. Roman Reigns actually fits this definition too. He just did a couple of things, and they were like, "All right, he's good. Let's just keep him off TV and just like find the moment for him on Raw." And that's what so many of these people feel like. Mm-hmm. Heavy Machinery's obviously had a run. Do you have the list of people right there in front of you? Heavy Machinery's had a run, and they're good, and they'll be fun. It'll be interesting to see how they look standing next to some other teams, but there's definitely money to be made with them one way or another.
There's also EC3.
Oh, no, but before we get off that, Dozovic is his worm. I mean, I think he's like 4.5 feet tall, but he looks stout. I mean, he's obviously very stout. He's very good at wrestling. And that little worm gimmick that he does now is there's money there. There's always money in a wrestler doing the worm, especially a big hulking one. EC3 is a perfect example of like, there wasn't really room for him in NXT. they finally found a little spot for him, and he got called up because he was always main roster ready.
How did they never like have him tag with Bobby Roode? Those guys could be like brothers.
Well, they were in TNA together. They crossed over. Yeah. I don't remember if they were part of that same stable.
Be together.
I mean, they're probably in the gym a lot together. You know, they're both well put together fellows. EC3 was in WWE forever ago, and then he left, went to TNA, created that character there, and then came back. Got a pretty good theme song. One of those NXT theme songs that people are going to sing along to. His promo package was hilarious because it was like, it made it look like he was like a male stripper gram. And he certainly has a little bit of that vibe.
Bruce Beefcake.
Yeah. Or post-wrestling Buff Bagwell. I went down a Buff Bagwell shoot interview rabbit hole yesterday.
My God.
Yeah, I was watching something on purpose, you know, and then like I just have the window open and suddenly I'm like four shoot interviews in, you know? I mean, they're not like long ones, when you go on YouTube and they like someone has edited together everybody's sure. opinion of Scott Steiner or like, you know, whatever.
Why do you have the window open? Were you going to jump out of it?
By the end of that, I wanted to.
Yeah, I bet.
Anyway, we'll save this for the stuff. Yeah, we'll save this for our Buff Bagwell tribute-ish episode in 2 weeks. We're not actually going to do that. So anyway, EC3, who else got called?
Lars Sullivan.
Well, yeah, we knew about Lars, but he's going to be, I'm very excited about Lars for a lot of reasons. We already have a...
Have you heard the rumors of what they might do with him?
What?
I don't know. Is it going to be a spoiler? I just read somewhere that he might be with Daniel Bryan.
Really?
As his like muscle.
Huh.
They look alike.
Kind of.
Kind of got that.
Well, you got we're going to have a piece on him on theringer.com like the moment he shows up. So I'm very interested in him for a lot of reasons and you will soon see why. And then who else?
Nikki Cross.
Oh yeah.
The guitarist from Motley Crue.
No, you're thinking of Nikki Six. He was the bassist. Mick Mars was the guitarist, and Mick Mars has like a terrible, debilitating disease. So I hate you now for bringing that up. Nikki Cross was part of Sanity in NXT, so hopefully we'll see if she's part of that on the main roster. She wrestled Becky that one time when they were over there in the UK. She made a kind of one off appearance. So she's ready. She'll be fun. She'll be really fun. Hopefully they'll use her right.
And then the other person is Lacey Evans.
Oh yeah, Lacey's not really ready for the main roster, but I get it. She has a little bit of that. She doesn't quite fit in NXT either vibe, and maybe they'll have a place for her. I think she's a vet. She's an army vet or whatever. I mean, she's got some good, interesting backstory. She's got a good look. She's got that kind of like boogie woogie bugle boy sort of
Company B.
Huh? Yeah, she's got a little. She's got that. She's like has a little bit of like the retro pinup vibe, but it's all military.
USO tour.
It's like a USO Wonder Woman, but she was actually in the Army. I think you can Google that. Or Air Force.
I think she was in the Marines. Also, even though you don't think she's ready, they're building up the women's division. I mean, it's becoming more and more popular, and they're headlining.
Yeah, former US Marine. You were right about her. Yeah. It's just one of those catch-22 things. They're not quite giving them enough time with the amount of talent that they have, but if they're going to give them more time, they're going to need more talent. So.
Exactly. When did Becky's big push really start?
Leading up to SummerSlam.
And when did they film the Marine 16 or whatever number it is?
I have no idea.
Before that, right? So do you think knowing she's in the movie, that helps with that push? They kind of use that to help promote the movie? And vice versa.
Well, that used to be, I mean, the old thing used to always be that they would give people pushes, like baby face pushes right before a movie came out. So they could sort of like go out there and do PR for it. But now they don't really care about the face heel thing so much anymore.
But still, I mean, she gets a monster push the same time her movie comes out. Did it come out? I don't even know.
No, I think she kind of did it on her own. Oh, the movie, I think it's, I don't know, man. I do not need to find out. I do not need to do that work.
If Buff Bagwell is not in it, you're not watching it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Oh, Christopher Daniels is apparently talking to Ring of Honor and All Elite too. See, this is wild. We have like bidding wars going on for these people. The other thing from just the general All Elite thing. One is that there were talks that WWE had officially made offers to probably Cody and the Bucks. And Meltzer's report was that it was seven figures a year for multiple years. So, you know, not bad at all. And then the Bucks and Cody are all officially not appearing at the Ring of Honor New Japan show WrestleMania weekend at MSG, which is a great FU. Which means that all Elite is probably going to happen sooner rather than later. Now, Cody went on the record saying he's not going to work WrestleMania weekend in general because that's WWE's weekend. He doesn't want to step on their toes or whatever. But if you're close enough, if the Bucks are close enough to doing their own thing, that they're going to snub the major event of their current two employers, mm-hmm. I would guess that All Elite's happening sooner rather than later. Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens are coming back.
Oh, yeah.
And we got vignettes for both of them on Raw that were super cool. And Bray Wyatt gave us his own little Twitter vignettes, which are really creepy and make me sad.
Yeah. What could have been?
What could have been? Anyway, it's been a fun week. What else we need to talk about? Anything good?
I think that's it.
Well, Merry Christmas to everybody. Next week, we won't be here because we'll be celebrating holidays.
Their families.
I'm going to have a baby. But between now and the next time we do this podcast, I will probably have a child.
What are you naming it?
Machaman.
That's nice.
Middle name Randy. Last name Shoemaker.
Machaman Randy Shoemaker. It's good.
I was thinking about Andre the Shoemaker, but then it sounds like he makes shoes.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
I think you had said once before... Irwin R. Shoemaker
was a front runner for a long time.
That's good. He'd be smarter than you immediately. Just out of the womb, he'd be bossing you around. Making you do the chores.
I don't have any problem.
I think you should just name him Mark.
That's a fantastic name.
Yeah.
Mark and it's true.
Yep.
Anyway, have a happy end of the year, guys. I'll see you guys when I see you.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. All of the holidays.
Yep. Yeah, that covers it.
That covers everything. And I'll be back whenever I can. We're not going to disappear. Apologies, though, to Dean Ambrose. We'll see you back here next week, humanoids. Oh, wait. We'll see you back here when we see you.
We'll see you back here next year.
We'll see you back here next year, humanoids.
We are desperately out of time. The tape machines are rolling. We'll see you next week on the Masked Man Show.